The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at WJE.com.
Welcome to The Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Hurricane Irene was a severe and costly storm that originated in the Caribbean in late August 2011 and traveled up the east coast of the United States, causing widespread damage to infrastructure and a number of deaths. Vermont was one of the hardest hit states. Flooding from heavy rains as the storm passed through on August 29th damaged roads, bridges, and several municipal wastewater treatment plants. However, the staff members did an impressive job in restoring facilities and the water treatment process quickly, for which they received an EPA Excellence Award.
Today we have with us Jeff Fares, who's environmental engineer for the Vermont Department of Environmental Conservation, to discuss the challenges faced by operators of Vermont's wastewater treatment plants because of Hurricane Irene, and more generally, to talk about the critical role that small-town wastewater treatment plants play in the health and safety of their communities and the environment. Jeff, thanks a lot for talking with us today.
Sure, no problem.
Before we discuss the effects of Hurricane Irene, please tell us a little about the Vermont wastewater treatment plants, the number of plants affected by the flooding, the size of the towns that they serve, and whether all the plants are of a similar design.
Sure. Well, as you know, Vermont is a small state. We have about 625,000 folks in Vermont, which is smaller than many municipalities across the U.S. You know, our largest city, Burlington, has about 42,000 folks in it. Our largest treatment plant is in the town of Rutland, which is 6.8 MGD, million gallons per day. Probably a lot of other states look at 6 MGD and say that's on the small size of our medium-sized treatment plants, but it's our largest treatment plant. We have about 100 municipal treatment plants currently operating. The smallest treatment plant that I'm aware of is around 15,000 gallons per day, which is very much on the smaller size. And I think it handles primarily a small community located within a municipality. So hopefully that gives you an idea of what Vermont looks like from a wastewater treatment plant standpoint.
What's the typical treatment mechanism that you see in these smaller plants?
It really ranges. We have some simpler technologies, such as the aerated lagoons, all the way up to more recent technical progress, such as the sequencing batch reactor type process. And then our size really ranges across the board because our municipalities, again, vary in size so much.
And just to better inform our listeners, what are the standards, or broader terms, what are the expectations of the functions of these plants? That is, I understand the nature of the material coming in. What's the quality of the product coming out?
Okay. They all have discharge permits. And the effluent limits that are within those permits, you know, are based on the water quality standards that the river or lake that they discharge into needs to meet, or, you know, that we're attempting to have it meet. Stated a little differently, all our plants achieve secondary treatment. You know, some go a step beyond into tertiary treatment, and of course, all have disinfection also.
Are wastewater treatment plants particularly susceptible to flooding, and if so, why?
Yes, they are. And the reason is because of their location. You know, treatment plants were traditionally located in the low point and close to the river they would discharge to, which naturally leads them to be susceptible to flooding from that river or whatever rivers happen to be nearby. They're also susceptible to flooding from high flows, coming into the plant. I don't know what the right word for that is, but it might be like an internal type of flooding that exceeds the plant's capacity to handle the amount of wastewater coming in.
And was the flooding during Hurricane Irene mainly due to heavy rains, or were there infrastructure failures as well?
Mainly due to heavy rain. You know, there were power outages, though I haven't heard of anything along the lines of natural gas being disrupted or something like that. But the primary cause of the damage was flooding.
And what happened to the plants during the flooding? Was there infrastructure damage, or was it simply the flooding itself?
You know, that's an interesting way to put it, simply flooding. It was a flooding, but I wouldn't say the results were simple at all. Some treatment plants were literally underwater. In that case, it did two things. One, it removed all the biological mass that was in the plant that is critical to the treatment plant. You know, it was just lost. Second, in some cases, it ended up filling up the various tanks with a combination of whatever was in the river as it was flooding. Heavy, dense sediment and rocky types of debris were common. After the flooding receded, there were things like trees in these treatment plants. Propane tanks ended up being a problem in terms of floating down the rivers. Who knows? Whatever was in the river, it very well could have ended up in these treatment plants. So part of the problem they had was just digging themselves out from whatever was left behind by the flooding.
So that's kind of a basic cleanup. It sounds like they had to restart the biological processes, which I think are probably the secondary processes.
That is correct. The first priority was to get disinfection, and in some cases, if they lost power. I know of at least one treatment plant where not only did they lose the power going into the plant, they quite literally lost their emergency generator. So they had to figure out how to get the disinfectant, in this case chlorine, into the wastewater. Then from there it became, okay, what is the next important thing? It might be to try to get the secondary, i.e. biological, aspect of the treatment process going. In other cases, it was to go into the collection system and try to get the collection system back up and running. And it's kind of, from my standpoint, it's kind of interesting. The treatment plants, there was flooding. There was a lot of flooding-related damage, you know, motor control centers that are underwater, pumps that were under, or motors that were underwater, that type of thing. But the basic concrete tankage all survived without damage. The place where we saw the most damage in terms of needing to replace or gut the infrastructure, if you will, was in the collection systems. And there we had things like pump stations where, they were just so inundated with water. Maybe the pump station itself didn't need to replace, but the pumps, the motor controls, basically everything but the can itself needed to be replaced. And so after getting primary treatment, probably the next priority was to try to get your collection system so that it was at least collecting sewage or wasn't, allowing it to overflow. And then the next priority would be to try to get your treatment process back as best as possible.
A serious threat to the system, a lot of things to respond to. Were there procedures in place? Was there a handbook to look at to know what to do first and what to do next?
There's not a handbook that I'm aware of. I'm sure some treatment plants have either been through flood events before, so they had some sort of done it before, historical knowledge. Some of them might have had their O&M manuals that are put together after the treatment plant was built that were helpful. To be honest with you, the treatment plant operators are pretty darn good, if not excellent. And in most cases, I think they had a good sense of what were their priorities and what did they need to do first and what could wait.
And were the operators on the scene when this took place, or did they have to get to the plant from wherever they might have been?
It really varied. One of the things that, because Hurricane Irene was people knew about it in advance. We were following it the week before as it was, becoming more and more well-known that it was going to come up the coast and hit New England. So people knew it was coming. And the operators on that Sunday were watching the conditions at in their town and at their treatment plants pretty well. There are multiple stories of operators who said, as they were watching maybe river levels come up or knowing the only access to the treatment plant could get blocked off, chose to go down the treatment plant and do things like sleep in their truck, sleep inside the treatment plant itself. So they were there. They were able to respond and not have to worry about getting there later. Others, we hear stories about, rowing across to get to the treatment plant. There's one story of an operator who, as his treatment plant was flooding, his last efforts after, shutting off all the stuff he could shut off to try to save the plant as much as possible, basically had to swim out.
How long did it take to get all the wastewater treatment plants running normally again?
Well, what is the exact definition of normal? I'm not trying to be coy there, but to get the treatment plants, particularly the ones that suffered, damage in terms of pumps needing to be removed and, rebuilt, or motor control centers that were flooded and needed to replace, that was into the months to get that done. Most treatment plants, though, were able to get, at least primary treatment up and running within a day, which I think is a real testament to the operators. And in most cases, we had secondary treatment within a week, although there were some exceptions to that, to the plants that were the heaviest hit.
Was there an issue associated with getting replacement parts in a timely fashion?
Sure. First of all, a lot of this stuff is not off the shelf type of stuff. And then you add into that, this wasn't unique to Vermont. This was going on throughout other parts of New England. So I'm sure there was, supply type difficulties in getting the parts.
What did it cost to do this?
That's a really good question. We really don't know, and I doubt we will ever have a good number on that. And, part of it is the communities themselves took on the cost of getting their treatment plants and their collection systems back up and running. There's a bunch of questions of how much is it going to be covered by insurance, how much is going to be covered by FEMA. I doubt those questions have been answered yet, and who knows, when they will be answered and whether we'll ever actually know how much this did cost.
So these are really dispersed costs, that is, they're local government costs. They're not costs for the state agency directly, I assume.
That is correct. And the funding of the treatment plants, although we administer grant and loan programs, the state agency I work for, DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, did not incur these costs.
So now that the water has receded, are there any ideas about writing guidelines? Or what are you doing to prepare for the future?
In terms of what is the state going to do, or DEC going to do in terms of, maybe putting together a guidance or something like that, probably not much. And the reason is because, again, the operators are very good. They know their plants better than we ever will. And to be honest with you, they're professionals. There are a lot of lessons learned by Hurricane Irene, things that folks thought would never flooded, and we learned from that. So I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that's going on where, we're dealing with the lessons learned. But to be honest with you, if there was another Hurricane Irene or the flooding along the lines of what Irene caused, a lot of the same problems are going to occur because of the location of the treatment plants. And to be honest, there isn't a solution out there, at least a solution that the municipalities can afford to alleviate that.
But do you think even at the local level, there may be relatively modest actions that people can take in terms of hardening the infrastructure? Or is it, because it sounds like the trade-off that we're looking at here is some investment to harden or being resilient. And what you're describing is a group of people and a group of facilities that were quite resilient.
Great. Thank you. And I'm sorry, I guess I misinterpreted a little bit. Thank you for that clarification. Absolutely. I don't know how many pump stations where the controls used to be below the ground are now above the ground, or people who have put in flood control gates on their control buildings. In case there is a flood, they can put these things up before the flooding happens, at least to protect the building. So that type of hardening, is going on.
And most of us take for granted the operation of our wastewater treatment plants. They're largely invisible to us. What are some of the daily challenges of small-town wastewater treatment plants during normal times?
Well, that's a great question. I think the biggest challenge these plants face is they aren't, they're staffed by typically 3 to 4 people. And so they end up having to be jack of all trades. They, every operator is involved in all aspects of the plant, whether it be, electrical, mechanical, doing the sampling, doing lab analysis, complying with the permit conditions, submitting the monthly reports that they need to submit, doing the O&M, whatever it is. So I think the biggest challenge is that these, even though these are smaller plants, even though some of them have the more simpler technology, they still are a relatively complicated device, if you will, facility to run. Then throw on top of that, your unscheduled events, a pump station that goes down for whatever reason, or a mechanical aerator that breaks, or, whatever it is. So I think that's the biggest challenge these folks face.
How are they trained, the people who operate the plants?
Oh, yes. The operators need to be certified, including, annual training to keep up with their certification. And to be honest with you, I look at this as not only are they professionals, but they're pursuing a career in wastewater treatment.
It's an interesting problem in my sense from what we experience where we live, but also the way you're describing the situation in Vermont is that the people that do this are invisible. The processes are invisible unless something goes wrong.
You know, that is true. Probably one of the few entities in town that know about it is the local town government. And that was when Hurricane Irene was going on. You heard about the National Guard and the fire departments and all the emergency-related entities that were responding. And that was absolutely the right thing to do and a good thing. But, you know, as I'm going around the state and trying to assess the damage that happened to our treatment plants, you know, I started to feel like, you know, we really do need to recognize these operators because they're doing it because they know they need to and they're dedicated. And, you know, this is what, you know, they knew they needed to do, but with essentially no recognition.
Did you experience any damage from the more recent hurricane, Hurricane Sandy?
No, Vermont really skipped it. All we got in Vermont was a good rainstorm. So, you know, while, again, Sandy did essentially what happened with Irene is it kicked into action trying to be as prepared as possible and knowing that it was coming, it really didn't affect Vermont, other than some power outages.
From your perspective, though, based on the sad story of Hurricane Irene, were people quicker to pay attention and get prepared when Sandy threatened?
In terms of the treatment plants, probably not, simply because in terms of Irene, I think they were prepared. What happened with Irene is that the consequences of the flooding were so much greater than anybody anticipated. Sandy, you know, same thing. We were prepared, but luckily, in fact, the day after Sandy, we did not get one phone call, meaning the treatment plants, for lack of better words, made it through Sandy without a problem, at least that we're aware of.
Very interesting, and interesting the way the infrastructure and particularly the people that manage the infrastructure responded to a very serious natural disaster. Jeff, thanks so much for telling us this story and for what you're doing to protect the people and the environment in Vermont. We appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Oh, you're very welcome.